The first Sunday in Advent. We're here. Wow. Thanksgiving's just a blur, right? It's the end of the liturgical year A, with its emphasis on the Gospel of Matthew. And today we begin a new liturgical year, year B, or the year when the Gospel of Mark, my favorite gospel, takes center stage in the lectionary text. The end of 2023 and the beginning of 2024, liturgically speaking. I don't know about you, but I just got used to writing 2023. Thanksgiving, wasn't that good? I hope everyone had a blessed Thanksgiving. Stores have been counting the days until Christmas since, well, I think Valentine's Day. At least Hobby Lobby has. Sports commentators will soon be making real predictions about who will play in the Super Bowl. And the calendar is already overflowing with Christmas parties and open houses and a mile-long list of to-dos. Each of these end times comes with a set of rituals. Rituals of waiting, rituals of expectation, rituals of arrival and hope. And most of them follow a predictable path. That's the useful thing about rituals. They create moments of predictability in the middle of rushing chaos. And in the middle of this crush, here we are telling each other about this scene from Mark's story as we prepare for the ritual celebration of Christmas. Though Mark's story has no birth scene at all, the gospel buzzes with the insistence that God will make good on promises that have been made, but not sufficiently kept, at least according to us. Some of these promises stretch beyond the boundaries of Mark's narrative world, stretching even beyond the boundaries of any possible world, and stretch all the way back to the culmination of all things, the end times, the second coming, the rapture. We don't hear that word very often in a Presbyterian and Lutheran church, do we? The rapture. Okay, I'm going to direct you to, and you don't need to Google it right now. You can do that in your car, not while you're driving, though. The Rapture Index. Did you know there was such a critter? There is. The Rapture Index. The purpose of this website is to, and I quote, eliminate the wide variance that currently exist with prophecy reporting and to a, quote, cohesive indicator, end quote. The Rapture Index is kind of a Dow Jones of end times, a prophetic speedometer. The higher the number, the faster we're moving towards the end. Now, these people who obviously have too much time on their hands list around 4 dozen categories in which they assign a score of 1 to 5, indicators that the end of the world is coming. And these indicators include the occult, Satanism, false prophets, the mark of the beast, whatever that is, the Antichrist, you can use your imagination there, earthquakes, floods, plagues, oil supply and price, ecumenism, unemployment, inflation, interest rates, globalism, liberalism, and civil rights. The scale for the total score ranges from 100, which is slow prophetic activity, to above 160, which is fasten your seatbelt, we're in for a bumpy ride. I checked the Rapture Index as of this morning. Try to stay calm. Hold on to your neighbor. The index is 187. Well, the goofiness that surrounds the second coming is kind of quite embarrassing, isn't it? The clearest thing Jesus ever said was, no one knows the day or hour. And fortune tellers and people with too much time on their hands have been guessing the day and hour ever since. At the year 1000, a flurry of predictions led many Christians to sell their homes. Martin Luther said the Pope was the Antichrist, so Luther expected Jesus soon. Christopher Columbus thought his explorations would lead to the final crusade. William Miller predicted the second coming would take place in 1843. His followers, the Seventh-day Adventists, have adjusted their schedule appropriately. Charles Taze Russell, the founder of the Jehovah's Witnesses, predicted the apocalypse would be in 1914. They also have postponed the end of the world. And who can forget the best-selling religious books of the 1970s, The Late Great Planet Earth by Hal Lindsey. The author predicted that Jesus would return in the next few years. He used profits from the book for a mansion that took 3 years to build. Interesting. As the year 2000 approached, remember 2000, those of you who are old enough? People began finding references to Y2K in the Revelation of John. Must be in their version of the Bible. And the Left Behind series is still making huge money. The silliness around the Second Coming seems as outdated as, I don't know, alchemy, carbon paper, and a rotary dial phone. But before we pitch it all, we need to remember that while many of the answers are foolish, the questions that started it all aren't. Question, at the end of history, what will be left? At the end of it all, will God be there? What are we supposed to do in the meantime? The early Christians believed that the end of the world was just around the corner. The Gospel of Mark was written around 40 years after Jesus' death, just after the Romans destroyed the temple in Jerusalem. Mark writes to tell persecuted Christians about how 2 days before his death, Jesus told his friends about the end of it all. Now, if you were describing the end of time, what kind of language would you use? Would you use scientific language? As the sun is rotating one day, the gases within the sun will collapse in on themselves. This will create a supergravity situation that will cause an implosion of the gases. The sun will supernova, and the first four planets in our solar system will burn up. Would you describe it that way? Would we use theological language? Eschatologically speaking, the parousia, the coming, or advent, will be the cessation of history. The finite will roll into the infinite. The world we know will become compost for the world God has been contemplating all along. That sounds pretty good, but I hope nobody asks me to spell that. Or would you use the kind of apocalyptic language Jesus used? When things are at their most horrible, when it's worse than you can imagine, when the sun doesn't shine and the moon goes black and the stars fall from the sky and all of creation falls apart, you will know that God is coming. The whole universe will melt away like a dream and something new, something that never entered our heads to conceive, will come crashing in. I like that language. I like that language. Jesus said that we can know God is coming in the same way that a fig tree knows that summer is coming. The change of seasons can be seen in the tree's softening branches and sprouting leaves. We can feel God's coming in the softening of our hearts. In this parable, the signs of God's coming aren't the catastrophes that some look for, but the hope that stirs within our spirits. Then Jesus' next parable gives the disciples insomnia. Well, at least for a little while. And then, you know, they fall asleep later. A master goes on a trip and leaves the servants to manage the house. They need to be constantly on the lookout because, you know, their ring doesn't work anymore. It's close to the end times, okay? And though the master may have marked the date of his return on his iPad calendar, he decides not to share that information. Now, any teenager, remember when you were a teenager? Any teenager who's been left in charge of the house knows how good the first few minutes feel, right? I'm going to raid the refrigerator. I might even look in the liquor cabinet. I don't know. The whole house is yours. You can watch whatever you want. You can eat whatever you want, wherever you want. You can leave clothes on the floor. But then, of course, eventually, the work you were given to start and finish before your folks came home starts to nag at you. The dishes pile up. The plants need to be watered. You have to clean up the mess. Sooner or later, you have to get to it. Have any of you seen those t-shirts that say, "Jesus is coming, look busy"? Have you seen those? I've seen bumper stickers too. Well, this parable tells us to get busy and pay attention. So as you vacuum, keep watching for Mom and Dad's car in the driveway. As you pick up the living room, listen to hear the front door open. None of us ever know when the end will come for us, for those we love, or for the world. Jesus kept saying over and over again, don't take anything for granted. God could show up any time. If you fall asleep for 15 minutes, you might miss the most important moment of your life. You might wake up to find God standing over you with suitcases in both hands saying, "Where were you when I arrived? The door was wide open and there were no lights on, literally and figuratively. I told you to stay awake." God wants us to wake up to whatever life is bringing us, to wake up to pain, if that's what's there for us to wake up to, because we can't be healed until we admit we're hurt. Wake up to the love we won't let ourselves feel because we're afraid our hearts will break again. Wake up to the future we're so angry about because it isn't the one we ordered. Wake up to the fact that we're not in charge, but we're the ones who serve. Wake up to the job we've been given, watching for God's presence. Wake up and understand that what we believe about the future affects the way we live each day. When our children are young and we realize they're growing up, it doesn't make us miss the present day. It makes us appreciate it more. When the church looks for God's coming, we hear the ticking of the clock and understand that every moment is filled with the possibilities of both hope and despair. Our job is to stay awake to everything that life brings us so that we don't miss God when God comes. The minister and scholar James Stewart, no relationship to the actor, describes a painting in one of his books that I read hanging in a museum in Scotland. It's a picture of a man playing chess with the devil for the man's soul. The man, who only has just a few pieces on the board, looks totally dejected. And Satan, of course, is smiling. He will soon checkmate the man. For years, people came to the gallery and saw only hopelessness. Then one day, a chess champion stood for hours looking at the chessboard. Finally, he announced, "It's all a lie. It's not true. The king still has moves left. The future is still in God's hands. In New York City, one of the biggest churches in New York City, there's a statue of the angel Gabriel on the roof. His horn is lifted to his mouth, ready to blow a blast to announce God's coming. Day after day, Gabriel stands ready, warmed by the summer sun, frozen by winter sleet, year after year, but no mighty blast, not even a tentative toot. The streets of the city below are crawling with traffic. Lines of apartments are busy, and businesses are busy, and there's conflict, there's death, there's love, there's birth. There's a thousand shattered hopes between dawn and sunset every day. And to most of the people on the street, they never look up. And those who do think Gabriel must be very silly. But the biggest question for all of us on this first Sunday of Advent, and I think every day, is to what are we heading? Who will have the final word? Not when it's going to happen. That's beyond our pay grade. But how we are going to live in the already but not yet kingdom of God here on earth. And I'll tell you, God is going to happen. God is going to bring peace. Maybe for now we can only dream of such a peace. And it takes strength to dream. That's probably why so many choose not to do it. It's easier to just go to sleep after you've pulled the covers over your head. But there are always those who dream, those who are up at night picturing what could be. Because the world that God has created is too good for us not to dream. And we have the strength to dream only because God said, "I love you," before we were even formed in our mother's womb. That gives us strength, that love, that grace, that infusion of everlasting hope gives us strength to push the covers off. Get our weary bodies out of bed morning after morning to plant our feet on solid ground and to look for signs of beauty and to choose joy. It takes strength to remember that we are not alone. We are not alone. And so we can say, "I love you too," to God and to God's world. So push those covers off. Find that solid ground. Look for beauty and choose joy and dream. I dare you to dream. Thanks be to God.